helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. James Madison wrote in Federalist Paper No. 14, "In the first place, it is to be remembered that the general government is not to be charged with the whole power of making and administering laws. Its jurisdiction is limited to certain enumerated objects which concern all the members of the Republic, but which are not to be attained by the separate provisions of any." This idea that the power of the federal government are limited and enumerated is confirmed by the 10th Amendment, which reads, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." Today, however, it seems the general government has assumed the whole power of making and administering laws. What does it mean when we have big government running every aspect of our lives? Sure, there are examples when one branch of government reigns in another, but lately those are pretty few and far between. So I want to start by looking at one of those examples of reigning in government. Then I'm going to talk with Lee Duigon about his recent article, Big Government, Small Government. The journey back to a limited government will be long and hard, but if we have any hope of restoring the federal government to its enumerated powers, it's a journey we must take, and that journey starts today. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel. Thank you for joining me here at the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I want to start with a case you may or may not have heard of about the EPA and its claim to the power to regulate the generation of electrical power. Did you ever imagine that a question about air pollution could end up changing the way governments work? Now, that may be exactly what happened with the Supreme Court's opinion in West Virginia versus the Environmental Protection Agency. What started as a question of whether or not the EPA's plan to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from the electric grid was constitutional turned into a statement about the limits of discretion granted to the executive agencies. The question before the court in West Virginia versus EPA seemed quite simple. Since the passage of the Clean Air Act 50 years ago, EPA has exercised this authority by setting performance standards based on measures that would reduce pollution by causing plants to operate more cleanly. In 2015, however, EPA issued a new rule concluding that the best system of emission reduction for existing coal-fired power plants included a requirement that such facilities reduce their own production of electricity or subsidized increased generation by natural gas, wind, or solar sources. The question before us is whether this broader conception of EPA's authority is within the power granted to it by the Clean Air Act. What was the EPA trying to do with their new rule to reduce emissions? The point, after all, was to compel the transfer of power-generating capacity from existing sources to wind and solar. The White House stated that the Clean Power Plan would drive an aggressive transformation in the domestic energy industry. The EPA claimed the authority to transform electrical generation throughout the country. Now, was this a power Congress had delegated to the EPA under the Clean Air Act? Well, according to the majority of the court, no. Under our precedents, this is a major questions case. In arguing that Section 111D empowers it to substantially restructure the American energy market, EPA claimed to discover in a long-extant statute an unheralded power representing a transformative expansion in its regulatory authority. It located that newfound power in the vague language of an ancillary provision of the Act, one that was designed to function as a gap filler and had rarely been used in the preceding decades. And the agency's discovery allowed it to adopt a regulatory program that Congress had conspicuously and repeatedly declined to enact itself. Given these circumstances, there is every reason to hesitate before concluding that Congress meant to confer on EPA the authority it claims under Section 111D. Not surprisingly, some of the justices disagreed with this assessment. Compare the majority's statement to how the dissent views the situation as written by Justice Kagan. As I have already explained, nothing in the Clean Air Act, or for that matter any other statute, conflicts with EPA's reading of Section 111. Notably, the majority does not dispute that point. Of course, it views Section 111, if for unexplained reasons, as less clear than I do. This is the true crux of the case. Who decides what a law means? Congress, who writes the laws, or the executive agencies that enforce it? Justice Gorsuch points out how the court goes about doing this in his concurrence. One of the judiciary's most solemn duties is to ensure that acts of Congress are applied in accordance with the Constitution in the cases that come before us. To help fulfill that duty, courts have developed certain clear statement rules. These rules assume that, absent a clear statement otherwise, Congress means for its laws to operate in congruence with the Constitution rather than test its boundaries. In this way, the clear statement rules help courts act as faithful agents of the Constitution. In other words, unless there is a clear statement in the law to the contrary, Congress means for its laws to be enforced following the Constitution, not testing the boundaries of it. Now, since the question revolved around how the EPA interpreted the Clean Air Act, let's start there. But, the agency explained, in order to control CO2 from affected plants at levels necessary to mitigate the dangers presented by climate change, it could not base the emissions limit on measures that improved efficiency at the power plants. The quantity of emissions reductions resulting from the application of these measures would have been too small. Instead, to attain the necessary critical CO2 reductions, EPA adopted what it called a broader, forward-thinking approach to the design of Section 111 regulations. Rather than focus on improving performance of individual sources, it would improve the overall power system by lowering the carbon intensity of power generation. And it would do that by forcing a shift throughout the power grid from one type of energy source to another. In the words of then EPA Administrator, the rule was not about pollution control so much as it was an investment opportunity for states, especially investments in renewables and clean energy. This view of the EPA's authority was not only unprecedented, it also affected a fundamental revision of the statute, changing it from one sort of scheme of regulation to an entirely different kind. It appears, in the mind of the EPA administrator, when Congress said they were to improve the efficiency of power plants, that really meant protect us all from climate change. Furthermore, when Congress said to improve performance of the individual sources of electricity, it really meant to regulate the entire electrical grid. Now, as the EPA administrator was quoted in the opinion, the Clean Air Act wasn't about pollution control, but investing in renewable energies. But is that what Congress included in the Clean Air Act? On EPA's view of Section 111D, Congress implicitly tasked it and it alone with balancing the many vital considerations of national policy implicated by deciding how Americans will get their energy. EPA decides, for instance, how much of a switch from coal to natural gas is practically feasible by 2020, 2025, and 2030 before the grid collapses, and how high energy prices can go as a result before they become unreasonably exorbitant. There is little reason to think Congress assigned such decisions to the agency. We also find it highly unlikely that Congress would leave to agency discretion the decision of how much coal-based generation there should be over the coming decades. We are confident that Congress could not have intended to delegate a decision of such economic and political significance to an agency in so cryptic a fashion. It appears the majority of the court does not agree with the EPA administrator's assessment. They seem to think it is highly unlikely that Congress would give an agency discretion to determine how much coal-based electrical power there should be over the decades, and I agree, especially since Congress has repeatedly rejected the cap-and-trade theory in the past. Under our precedents, this is a major questions case. In arguing that Section 111D empowers it to substantially restructure the American energy market, EPA claimed to discover in a long-exigent statute an unheralded power representing a transformative expansion of its regulatory authority. It located that newfound power in the vague language of an ancillary provision of the Act, one that was designed to function as a gap filler and had rarely been used in the preceding decades. And the agency's discovery allowed it to adopt a regulatory program that Congress had conspicuously and repeatedly declined to enact itself. So the court asked the EPA to show the clear congressional authorization to enact their new plan. Given these circumstances, our precedent counsels skepticism toward EPA's claim that Section 111 empowers it to devise a carbon emissions cap based on a generation shifting approach. To overcome that skepticism, the government must, under the major questions doctrine, point to clear congressional authorization to regulate in that manner. All the government can offer, however, is the agency's authority to establish emissions caps at a level reflecting the application of the best system of emissions reductions adequately demonstrated. The EPA could not show a clear authorization from Congress to implement a policy to force a nationwide change in how electricity is generated. For that reason, the court found for West Virginia, overturned the decision of the Court of Appeals, and sent the case back to court for further proceedings. Capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that will force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day. But it is not plausible that Congress gave EPA the authority to adopt on its own such a regulatory scheme in Section 111D. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself, or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body. The judgment of the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit is reversed, and the cases are remanded for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. Three members of the court, Justices Kagan, Breyer, and Sotomayor, disagreed with the majority. Today, the court strips the Environmental Protection Agency of the power Congress gave it to respond to the most pressing environmental challenge of our time. Interesting how three justices claim that the court stripped the EPA of a power Congress had not only not specifically given to it, but had repeatedly declined to implement themselves. Climate change's causes and dangers are no longer subject to serious doubt. Modern science is unequivocal that human influence, in particular the emission of greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, has warmed the atmosphere, ocean, and land. It's a good thing these justices are not scientists. There is plenty of scientific debate, not only about the severity of climate change, but how large a role humans play in it. And what does the severity of greenhouse gases have to do with what Congress has passed into law? The answer is absolutely nothing. What we see here are members of the court not only changing the subject, but claiming that the executive branch can enact laws not passed by Congress simply because the court believes there is a serious problem. The Clean Air Act was major legislation designed to deal with a major public policy issue. As Congress explained, its goal was to speed up, expand, and intensify the war against air pollution in all its forms. But did Congress give the EPA the authority for investment into certain technologies in an attempt to move electrical generation from coal to other sources? Well, first of all, Congress gave the EPA the power to regulate pollution, not carbon dioxide, which is a natural part of the ecosystem life cycle. But did Congress give the EPA the authority for investment into certain technologies in an attempt to move electrical generation in America from coal to other sources? Not even the dissent provided evidence that they did. The one question that I didn't see asked in this case was, did the Constitution delegate to the United States the power to control pollution, carbon dioxide, or the regulation of power generation? The answer to that question is definitely no. While the court said that Congress had not delegated to the EPA the power to create a cap-and-trade system or to regulate how electricity is generated in this country, no one seemed to ask this more basic question. Was this a power delegated to the United States in the first place? However, a fundamental statement was made by this opinion. Executive agencies cannot enact rules beyond the power specifically delegated to them by the legislation. It appears the EPA, along with most if not all the other executive agencies, believe they have the power to run the country. Not a very Republican way to do things, is it? A republic, by the way, is a commonwealth, a state in which the exercise of sovereign power is lodged in representatives elected by the people. To me, that is the biggest takeaway from this opinion. Who decides what the laws are, and by extension, what they mean? Is it we the people, through our elected representatives? Or is it the unelected bureaucracy that decides our laws? So according to the Constitution, the president is to be sure that the laws created by Congress are faithfully executed within the confines of the Constitution. While it has been many years since the courts have followed that structure, I'm glad to see that they have in this case. West Virginia versus EPA is one of three cases this year where the court has placed the language of the Constitution and laws of the United States above precedent, tradition, and more importantly, perceived need. While the three justices who dissented in these cases seem more interested in seeing the government rule rather than following the supreme law of the land, I don't expect that to change much with the appointment of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. I can only hope that the court will continue this fidelity to their oaths to support the Constitution of the United States. It would certainly help decide if America is to rise again to be a republic or continue to devolve into an oligarchy.
Because ultimately, that is the question. If laws are don't mean what they say, if courts can simply reinterpret, if courts get to decide what the law means, then we're not a republic. We're an oligarchy. And while some people may be quite happy to live in an oligarchy, that isn't a protection for liberty. Your rights are not protected in an oligarchy. They're simply up to, well, the majority of nine justices in black robes. But we have to remember, although we've been, the conservatives, constitutionalists, whatever you call them, have been happy with some of the recent court opinions, if you live by the court opinion, you die by the court opinion. The progressives are learning this lesson with the recent decisions. Hopefully, the American people will learn not to place their hope in courts, but in their ability to control the government that they created. Now, I have to jump out to a break. I've got an interview with Lee Dwegan coming up in just a minute, but before that, I want to give you an incredible offer. Healthy Cell is celebrating Independence Day by taking the entire month of July and offering my listeners, new and repeat, 50% off their immune super boost. That's right. New listener, repeat listener, just go to healthycell.com/outloud and use the code America50. That's America50, and you'll get 50% off an immune super boost. It's a great offer. I love this product. Don't miss out. Go to healthycell.com/outloud and then use the code America50 to get 50% off your immune super boost.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Let the silent voices be heard. It was the rallying call that started it all. It's a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news to societal and cultural stories. 6 amazing years of news blogs, informative podcasts, and great talk radio. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. If you join the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, we teach the rising generation to be free. You know, in the first segment, I was talking about the recent EPA versus West Virginia case, and I have with me this afternoon a gentleman by the name of Lee Dwegan, He is a contributing editor to the Chalcedon Foundation, a former reporter and editor, and he's got so much more than he does. But Mr. Dwegan, thank you very much for joining us here in the Constitution Study.
Thank you for inviting me.
I found your article about titled Big Government, Small Government on News with Views, and I found it interesting. But before we get into that, can you just tell my audience a little bit about your background, your past, and how you ended up writing this stuff?
Well, I was a political scientist at Rutgers, and then I decided there has to be more to life than being in a classroom. I became a newspaper reporter, then an editor, then a lot of other things, which I won't mention. They were all legal, though. I'm now with the Chalcedon Foundation, an international Christian ministry. I have a blog, leedwegan.com, and I have an ongoing series of fantasy novels published by Chalcedon. And hopefully our civilization will last long enough for people to read them.
That would be helpful, would it not?
Well, look at the things that are going on today. It was Panama joining the circus. People upset about their gas prices, so they closed down the highways and burned tires and let their government know that they were mad as hell and didn't want to take it anymore. We've got Holland, they're shooting at the farmers. Sri Lanka, I think most of us have seen the video of that. All over the world, it's melting down. People do not like what the globalists are selling. They promise us, you will own nothing and have no privacy, and you'll be happy. Dude, we're not happy.
But it is very 1984, at least in my point of view. You know, it's funny, I believe it was Santayana that first said, those who refuse to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And for 2 years now, on Independence Day, I've written articles documenting how Washington, D.C., the government of Washington, D.C. today is exactly like King George III in 1776. The exact same arguments we had for declaring independence then, we have now. And you're pointing out it's not simply the United States. We're not the only ones in this crazy insanity. You mentioned Sri Lanka and the Netherlands. I remember, what's been going on in Canada. You mentioned the communications. But just the truckers revolting, and you see they're having their bank accounts confiscated, GoFundMe shuts them down. It's like anything that doesn't say that you'll have nothing and like it seems to be shut down because we can't let people hear that things aren't going well.
Well, if you listen to Joe Biden's press secretary, things are tickety-boo. Listen to him and things are okay. There is no inflation. Heck, what inflation? I wonder when was the last time he ever had to go into a store and buy anything. I remember when Trent Lott retired from the Senate. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
Big Rhino. He said it was culture shock for him because for the first time in decades, he had to pay for stuff. He had a hard time getting his mind around that.
Well, I remember when President George H.W. Bush was in a grocery store and he saw the barcode scanner, something that's ubiquitous to us nowadays. He looked at that and thought it was amazing because he had never seen that, even though they'd been in grocery stores for years, because he doesn't shop. And it's this, you're right, it's like we know better and we will tell you what you will like, and we can't be wrong because we're the smart people and you're just the ignorant plebs that must do what we're told.
Yes, you're just the peasants. Shut up and obey us. You'll be happy, we promise.
let them eat cake is the phrase that always comes to mind.
Well, we can't afford their cake anymore.
You know, yeah, it's it's quite the situation. But it's funny how in the last 2 years, it seems that the rate of exposure to this tyranny has grown. It's not that the tyranny is suddenly gotten bigger. It's just now it's more out there.
They've stopped concealing their intentions. Now, are they that stupid, or do they know something that we don't know, but we really should know?
It's interesting.
There was an article today about a New York Times Siena College poll in which 1% of the respondents listed climate as the most pressing issue facing us in America. 1%. That's 1 point higher than nobody at all. And yet they're going to double down on this.
Well, yeah, because we've lost control. We've lost this basic concept of the structure of governments that our founding fathers set up. At least that's my point of view. Reagan, I think, put it well when he said, "We tell government what to do; they don't tell us," and that's gone. Now, government tells us everything. They tell us what light bulbs we can use, what toilets we can use, what we must put into our arms. Pretty soon it'll be what we're allowed to eat, what we're allowed to drink. More and more governments tell us how to live our lives. We've gone from being the land of the free to the land of the subject and fast approaching the land of the slave.
And we don't bloody like it. Look at Sri Lanka again. The folks down there on Capitol Hill ought to look at that a lot closer than they have, because that could be us. We don't want it to be us. We don't want chaos. But these people won't stop. We're governed by people who don't know us, who don't want to know us, who just do their thing, and the people will love it. And if they don't, who cares? We're us. We can do what we want. The people don't matter. We're not represented by people who actually represent us. Now, obviously, you can think of as many exceptions to that as I can. But here's Biden saying, you know what we need? We need for me to declare a climate emergency, which will allow me to do any freaking thing I want to do, including shut down the economy and not to sell any more gasoline and in general turn our country into a third world basket case. I don't know where he derives the authority to do that. I would hope that if he attempted to do it, that Congress would somehow stop him, that the Supreme Court would somehow stop him. But I don't know. We're at a place in our history where we have not been before.
You know, it's interesting. I'm frequently asked, what can we do? And I'm actually doing a tour through the United States later this year where I'm hopefully going to answer that question. My theory about how we restore the blessings of liberty to this country is realize that we focus way too much attention on Washington. We've allowed Washington to assume a level of power that our founding fathers never wanted to have. And in fact, James Madison wrote in I think it was Federalist Papers 14, that they were supposed to have limited and enumerated powers. We did not want them to basically create and administer the laws for the entire nation. And what I find interesting is a lot of people said they seem lost in this idea. And part of it has to do, we need to educate ourselves about what we can do, because the government isn't going to do it. You know, we turn our children over to government to say, you educate them. And for some strange reason, they're not teaching them about the Constitution. They're not teaching them about the proper spheres and roles of government. And then we're surprised when the people that came out of that education system have no clue how this country was designed to work. They don't even teach the Constitution in law school anymore. Why are we surprised that lawyers, judges, and politicians, which many of whom are lawyers, have no clue how this government was designed, how this country was designed to function?
Well, you don't need to be a lawyer to understand the Constitution. What is the government's purpose according to the United States Constitution? It's to promote the general welfare and to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. Is it doing those things?
Well, it's interesting.
Not very well.
Yeah, because if you look at it and say, you're right, that's a preamble to the Constitution, which is the creation of the federal government. But if you even go back to the Declaration of Independence, why do we have governments in the first place? According to the Declaration, it is to secure our rights. Yet time and time again, we see governments securing not our unalienable rights, but something they make up and simply call a right. We need that understanding.
Out of the clean blue sky, oh, we have a right to gay marriage now. You have a right to call yourself a woman if you're not a woman. And you have a right to compete in women's sporting events. All the stuff that they make up. But, you know, the purposes of government, we can go back farther than the Declaration. We can go back to St. Paul in Romans chapter 13, who tells us what governments are for? To restrain evildoers, to protect us from those who would do us harm, to administer justice. And Paul was even willing to accept a pagan Roman government as long as it did those things, which until later in its history, by and large, the Roman government did do those things. And it had legitimacy, which it pissed away, of course, but that came a little later.
And we certainly are learning from that. You mentioned before that you don't need to be a lawyer to understand the Constitution. That's my whole premise. In fact, I think if you want to understand the Constitution, probably the last place you should go is someone who went to law school. That's just my personal experience. But, you know, one of our founding fathers, John Jay, said every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. I believe that's an excellent place to start. You know, there are a lot of problems. There is a big mess right now. But I look at it like, how would you eat an elephant? You got to start somewhere. You have to take that first step, that first bite. And I think the most effective one would be to start reading the Constitution and learning, wait a second, these are the rules that we've set up for government. These are the way it's supposed to work. Why are we hiring people to represent our authority that aren't following the rules? Then maybe we can figure out how do we start firing the people who are violating their oath of office and see how do we hire people that will actually abide by their oath or affirmation to support the Constitution of the United States.
Well, let's go back a few minutes, because you did put your finger on the heart of the problem. The heart of the problem is our so-called public education system, which has done everything but the things it's supposed to do. There was a Gallup poll a couple of days ago. 28% of Americans trust their public education system. That's about 1 out of 4. Why are we still using it?
Well, because it's cheap. It appears to be cheap because you're not laying cash out of your own pocket.
Yeah, it comes right out of your paycheck before you cash your paycheck.
But, you know, I like to say,
in most states and towns, the school budget is bigger than the rest of the departments put together. Yeah. Police, fire, administration, put them all together and they're less than the school budget.
And I think we've lost this idea. See, when I was a child, parents were involved in the public school. Now parents are kept away from the public school. But I think the core issue, the thing that keeps coming to mind is something I like to say is, it's not what you don't know that hurts you. It's what you know that just isn't so that really gets you in trouble. And that's a lot of what's being taught nowadays.
Yeah, well, what are they teaching? They're teaching critical race theory, transgender, gay marriage, social justice, climate change. They're not teaching the Constitution, heavens no. They're not even teaching basic arithmetic.
And the as you note in your or as you, your title of your article says, as government gets larger, liberty gets smaller. And as our government has grown, our freedoms and liberty are quickly disappearing.
And we're not even the worst. Look at Australia. Look at New Zealand. They've done everything there but herd people at gunpoint into quarantine camps. That has settled down a bit since, but 6 months, a year ago, joint was jumping.
Yeah. And what's going on, again, you see it in Canada, you see it in China. We're seeing this global suppression of freedom and growth of government. Now, I'm coming up to a break, but so, Mr. Guigan, if you could kind of let my followers know where they could find more information, more of your articles, your novels and whatnot, I think that'd be great.
Well, the best place to go would be my blog, leeduigan.com. That's LeeDuigon.com.
And I will put a link to that on the show page when the podcast posts. So you'll be able to find it there.
The blog includes descriptions of my novels and where you can buy them, in addition to my daily posts.
Oh, great. Well, Mr. Duigan, thank you very much for joining me. It was an interesting conversation. Again, this was based on his article, Big Government, Small Liberty, on News with Views. You can also find him at leeduigan.com. And he does also work with the Chalcedon Foundation. They can be found at chalcedon.edu. Mr. Wiegand, thank you very much. I hope to hear you again here on the Constitution Study.
You're very welcome.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that interview. I always like getting different people's points of view, and we can discuss them and debate them openly. That's the sharing of information. Now, if you'd like to hear more, one great place to go would be to AmericaOutloud.com. It's not just radio programs. They've got articles, videos, stories that you can use and you can share to help other people find and enjoy the blessings of liberty. And we'll be back right after this short break.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. I'm glad you did. We're talking about, well, the power of government, ultimately. This idea that not only must government be limited to its enumerated powers, but that allowing it to go beyond those powers is dangerous. It's dangerous to liberty. It's dangerous to freedom. We talked about the recent court case, EPA versus West Virginia, where a government court told a government bureaucracy that there was something they couldn't do. And while I am happy for the outcome, it's still pretty much on shaky ground. We then had the wonderful interview with Lee Duigan and the discussion of how government grows, liberty recedes. So I want to wrap up today by looking at a couple of recent examples. Now, we are all familiar probably with the Dobbs Supreme Court case that overruled Roe v. Wade. And a lot of the hyperbole and nonsense that went along with it, including the claims that somehow this would be used to overturn Obergefell, the Supreme Court opinion saying that the right to homosexual marriage was guaranteed by the Constitution. Now, I want to make an interesting point about something as we look at this. Obergefell is not law. Never has been law. Because courts don't make law. All legislative power, all lawmaking power is vested in Congress. Now, what we have is an opinion that, well, carries a lot of weight. Well, that wasn't good enough for members of Congress. So just as the court in Dobbs said that this was a power that needed to go back to the states, the regulating abortion was a power that needed to go back to the people and their elected representatives. It was not a power delegated by the Constitution of the United States. Therefore, logically, it is not something that's a federal purview. Well, by that logic, there is a point, and that is homosexual marriage is not a right guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States, at least not directly. Now, there is an interesting twist to this. We do have the Equal Protection Clause, but the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment applies to the states, not to the federal government. Now, I'm not saying that federal law should not apply equally, but it's a question of what the Constitution actually says. Now, since the regulation of marriage is not a power delegated to the United States, when the House of Representatives passed legislation that would prohibit states from banning same-sex marriage, they violated the Constitution of the United States. See, they were assuming a power not delegated to them by the Constitution of the United States. Now, here's the interesting thing. Should states decide to prohibit same-sex marriage, they have another hurdle to climb. Does that law violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment? Now, I'm sure that's something that we could dig into and gnaw on for quite a long time. It has to do with definitions. We talked about that before, but there's a lot more to it. What I am saying, though, is Congress does not have the power to pass this legislation. See, Congress only has the power to write laws that are necessary and proper for putting into effect the powers delegated to it or any department of the United States. Since regulating marriage, since defining marriage is not a power delegated to the United States, this is another example of the federal government going beyond its power, becoming larger and expanding its power, thereby making liberty smaller. Now, my point here isn't either to defend or disparage homosexual marriage, at least not at this time. I have my opinions, but I want us to look at the importance of the enumerated powers. Since regulating marriage, since defining marriage is not one of those enumerated powers delegated to the United States, this action is unconstitutional. It's criminal. And again, according to both the Supreme Court and Alexander Hamilton, it's null and void. It's invalid. It cannot be valid. And just as the Supreme Court foisted same-sex marriage on the country illegally, here we have the Congress trying to do the same. Now, so far, it's only passed the House. I don't know what kind of reception it's going to get in the Senate, but I guess we'll find out over the coming days and weeks. But there's another example where federal overreach has led to a depression of our liberty. See, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, have what's called the Vaccine Adverse Reporting System, VAERS. We've all heard about it. I've even pointed out many times the numbers coming out of VAERS and how many adverse effects have been reported related to the quote-unquote mRNA vaccines. I say quote-unquote because according to the law, they're not vaccines. So again, here we have a position from those in government and parts of the medical industry that say these treatments, these mRNA treatments, are safe and effective. And I've got scientific data that proves, well, they're not effective and they may not be safe. So we have a database specifically set up by the FDA and the CDC, and they've compiled more than 1.3 million reports of adverse events related to or around the taking of one of these vaccines, and 29,000 of those ended in death. Yet many of those who question the safety, who've raised questions about these reports, were they dismissed as conspiracy theorists? See, that's the power of allowing the decision be made by government regulatory agencies. See, we seem to have this general idea that if the government does it, it's fair and effective, forgetting that, well, government is simply made up of people. And just like people who get a government paycheck and people who don't, they make mistakes. They have their own agendas. They have their own biases. They have their own political posturings. So when I see a new drug that could not have gone through the full safety testing, physically could not, time doesn't bend that way. It takes up to 10 years to do the safety testing on a new drug. You cannot do it in 10 months. When I see 1.3 million adverse effects, when I see the not just the deaths correlated with the COVID vaccine, but deaths overall going up, when we see the reports of vaccinated athletes simply falling over dead, there's got to be something going on. But that information is suppressed because the ultimate decider is not the people, it's government bureaucrats. See, as the government has taken over control of the medical system, of the drugs you're allowed to use, of the drugs you're allowed to test, well, then your liberty to try other things is minimized. I've been reading a book recently that's been documenting some of the, especially so far, the early findings in treating COVID-19. And these findings were ignored. They were suppressed by government actors. Where's the liberty? How many people suffered and potentially died because they were refused the opportunity to try a drug that has been in production for decades, has been safely used by people for decades? One of them actually won a Nobel Prize for the work for the scientists that developed it, but they were not allowed to try. They were told their only option was an experimental drug. We had a medical person come over today to visit my wife, and there was two interesting things. She walked in wearing a mask. And my wife said, "Why are you wearing that?" She says, "Well, if I want the job, I have to wear a mask." Now understand, there is no scientific data that shows she was wearing a surgical mask, right? Just a paper mask, that type of mask does anything to stop the spread of any respiratory virus. That there's actually evidence that it actually increases the likelihood of you catching the virus because you're rebreathing so much of your own air. She also mentioned that to keep her job, she had to get a vaccine. In other words, she had to she was forced to participate in a medical experiment in large part because of government regulations. As government gets larger, liberty gets smaller. Now listen, if I wanted to limit access to my house to people who wore masks and were vaccinated, I could certainly do that. That would be my choice. Do you know the choice I don't have anymore? Is to offer those services to someone who is not vaccinated. Because all the healthcare people that are still working had to get vaccinated because a bureaucrat said so. See, this idea, we've become so used to government in control of everything, it doesn't dawn on us that there's a reason why our founding fathers did not give them that power. Because it's dangerous. It's dangerous to them. It's dangerous to us. It's dangerous to freedom. It's just plain dangerous. Now, does that mean that we the people may have to do some more work? Yeah. You may have to do some more research. You may have to investigate some things on your own. You may need to consult with your doctor rather than sitting there and being fed the pabulum from some government bureaucrat. That's the cost of being free. It's the cost of liberty. As is often said, freedom is not free, but it's a lot better than the alternative. So I ask you to consider the future, not just your future, your children's future, their children's future, their children's future. If we continue to allow government to grow, how much liberty will be left by the time your children become adults or your grandchildren? If growing government squeezes out freedom and liberty, how long before we resemble the Soviet Union or Communist China? This is not, again, hyperbole. This is looking at facts. This is looking at evidence. And in many ways, it's not simply government. I've already had videos. I had a strike from YouTube because I actually documented that states illegally changed the manner of appointing presidential electors in 2020. For a week, I wasn't allowed to post onto YouTube. When I pointed out that what they had claimed that I had promoted widespread election fraud, I pointed out how states violated the agreement, the law, the Constitution. They didn't care. I wasn't surprised. Again, YouTube's a private company. If they don't want that content on their platform, that is their right. They're owned by private individuals. But if we can't trust government to give us information, if big government is squeezing out information they don't like, and you've got the legacy media, the corporate media that has been doing that for decades, and now we have social media doing that as well, where do we turn? Where does freedom of speech exist when the entities we've relied on in the past are antithetical to it? My answer is to find other places to speak. It's why I post on YouTube and Rumble and Gab TV. That's where my videos go. It's why I post on Twitter and Gab and True Social and Locals and Parler. I don't post on Facebook because they won't let me in. That's fine. That's their choice. But if freedom isn't free, then it's going to take a little bit of work. Now, I've been mentioning for weeks now my Blessings of Liberty tour. I'm going around this later this year, and I'm meeting with people and explaining the blessings of liberty and how we get them back. Not some pie in the sky, 12-step program and life is wonderful. The long, hard work of restoring the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Personally, I think it's worth it. It's what I've dedicated my life to the last several years. I gave up a very successful IT career to focus on this. And you know what? I'm happy. I'm happy doing it. Now, hopefully you'd be interested in something like this. Head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. Find out if I'm coming to a location near you. But if I'm not, fill out the form at the bottom. Invite me to come speak to your event, to your group. I have everything from people who just have a group of people that want to get together and listen to me talk. I have other more formal events that I'm going to. Now, if travel becomes an issue, I can still do these things online. The point is, as I mentioned with Mr. DeWeegan, It is our lack of knowledge that has allowed this to happen, I believe in large part. And I'm willing to do the work to help rectify that. But I cannot do it alone. If I just show up in your town on a street corner and start talking about the Constitution, people won't pay attention to me. But if I can work with you to set up an event, to invite people, then maybe we can start making a difference. And people look at me and say, Paul, what difference is that going to make? You can't impact enough people. Well, only about 3% of the colonists actually fought for independence. And if all it took was 3% to fight for our independence, maybe with just 3% of Americans, we can restore our independence. We can stop being dependent on government and their bureaucracy. And we can once again live at liberty, as free and sovereign citizens, not subjects and slaves to governments at all levels. Now, if you'd like to share some of this information, let people know. They can listen to the Constitution Study weekdays at 4 p.m. on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. They can listen on our media player, on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. They can also catch the shows on podcast, on any podcast platform they use. Just look for the Constitution Study. And hey, do me a favor. Have them subscribe and rate the show. It helps other people find us as well. All the links can be found on the homepage on AmericaOutLoud.com. And please, help me share these blessings of liberty, not just for ourselves, not just for our posterity, but for everyone in this great country, from sea to shining sea.